So it's a Friday night in late June. You probably know most of the big stuff that happened today. The horrible situation with that building down in Miami, Kamala Harris's ridiculous visit to the border or non-visit. So we'll get to some of that stuff. But first, halfway into 2021, I thought we'd kind of reiterate a little bit of the principles and the things that we talk about on this show that very few others talk about. It gives you an idea where I'm coming from. I'm very upfront about my biases and where I am perhaps not terribly objective. And I think you should know that. Fair enough? I think so. All right, let's start. Number one, I support Donald Trump. I do. I like him on the substance. I like him on the policy. And I also like his style. I do. And I hope he comes back. Number two, something else that doesn't get discussed very often. I believe that police officers are not a threat to black men in America. The media, they have been terribly irresponsible in how they represent law enforcement. Also, this is something I learned from Barack Obama. There are too many absent black fathers. He talked about that. This is something that needs to be discussed widely. And I do believe some measures can be taken to improve this very unfortunate situation. Also, Ashley Babbitt was murdered. Very important story that no one talks about. We do, and we will. January 6th has been exploited by Democrats for political reasons. They are trying to basically make it almost illegal to talk about the other thing that I am very concerned about, the fairness of the November 3rd, 2020 elections. It's perfectly okay and legal to say you're concerned about the fairness of that election. Joe Biden is the president. I get that. Still, there are many unanswered questions about what happened in November. Speaking of Joe Biden, he's not up to the job. We're all seeing that. And I believe this year we started with President Trump. We will finish with somebody other than Joe Biden, most likely Kamala Harris, because if you've been watching Joe and up the stairs, down the stairs, losing his mind, his place in press conferences, this potentially won't end well for Joe Biden. We wish him the very best. I want him to be safe, but I don't think he's going to last 4 years. All right. Also, I'm a United States Marine. That makes me a bit different from most of the people you'll encounter in the media ecosystem. I spent 9 years on active duty. I lived all over the country, met people from all walks of life, and got to travel the world. I did not grow up in journalism, and it makes me a different type of media presence. I think you'll see that as this show unfolds. Also, I really like real people, regular people. If you really want to know what's happening in America, you got to talk to people who are not in office, who are not celebrities, just people all around us. It's one of the reasons Donald Trump did so well. I've seen him at parties, actually. He doesn't talk to the higher-ups, the beautiful people. You can always see him talking to the doorman, talking to the waiter, talking to the busboy. That's how he knew what was happening in this country, and that's why he was so successful when he ran for president. Also, I'm a Christian, and it informs in just about everything I do, hopefully. Come up short all the time, but I'm getting better, and I'm very grateful to God, and ask me about it sometime. I always like to talk about it. So that's a little bit about where I'm coming from as a host of this show. With that in mind, today you may have heard that Derek Chauvin, former officer in Minneapolis, sentenced to 22 and a half years in prison for the murder of George Floyd. I really don't have anything else to say about that. Horrible situation. And I understand that an appeal is underway. Here's something that, while the whole country talked about that for most of the past year, very few are talking about Ashley Babbitt. Ashley Babbitt, 35 years old, shot and killed by a Capitol Hill police officer, we believe, on January 6th. What happened there? She was unarmed. No warning was issued. Some say on social media, well, she was trespassing in a government building. She deserved it. That's not case. That's not how it works. There was no warning, none. She was unarmed. Why aren't there more questions being raised about this? Media could care less. Republicans, Democrats. This, by the way, in violation of the George Floyd criminal justice bill, which says you can only use deadly force when someone is about to die. And Ashley Babbitt was climbing through a window, it looks like. She did not pose a deadly threat to anyone at that moment. No police department in the world can say that was a justified use of deadly force. What else? We have this building situation in Florida. Terrible. They are still looking for survivors, but it got me thinking. This doesn't happen. It's not supposed to happen in America. Happens very rarely. I remember as a kid, I-95, a portion of that bridge just collapsing, disappearing. Anybody remember this? It happened in Connecticut. There was a bridge in Minnesota a few years back, and then there was a platform in Missouri that collapsed. But you have to, many years go by, nothing like this happens in America or should happen in America. It is rare. This happens in other countries all the time. Buildings come down, bridges come down. It's just, it's kind of a fact of life in the third world. Why did it happen here? We don't know yet. We're not going to know for a long time, but I do have a theory that everybody seems to be taking their eye off the ball, their eye off whatever their primary responsibility is. We're all addicted to our phones, and sometimes I wonder, everybody, from whether it's a taxi driver to a lawyer, everyone seems to be checked out and distracted. I will be curious to see if that could have played a role in what happened in Miami. You know who's distracted, actually, most of all? Congress. They're not really working for us. They're working for themselves. Ridiculous political stunts on the floor of the House of Representatives designed to generate media attention. But when it comes to the actual work of governance, of oversight, they don't seem to be particularly interested. Personal scandal, anything that can drive their fundraising numbers up. It's really, really sad. Also, this new woke wave is dangerous. This is an ad for the Central Intelligence Agency. Does this make you think about protecting our country or national security?
I'm a woman of color. I am a mom. I am a cisgender millennial who's been diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder. I am tired of feeling like I'm supposed to apologize for the space I occupy rather than intoxicate people with my effort. My brilliance. I am proud of me. Full stop.
Full stop. It looks like she's running for assistant principal of some youth center or middle school, an analyst for the Central Intelligence Agency. Everything she just talked about has nothing to do with national security. Everybody just seems to want to star in some stupid video on Instagram. We're just losing sight of what we should be focused on. Hey, the infrastructure bill that was passed, finally, it's like paired of most of the ridiculous stuff. But the next version is going to have a lot of that ridiculous stuff in it. Infrastructure. We know what it is. Roads, bridges, buildings. Not this stuff.
Childcare is infrastructure. Period. Full stop. We've got to make the investment.
What's with this period full stop thing, by the way? I don't like it. The infrastructure bill that was hammered out is being resisted by the squad and the far left. You know what their big grievance with this bill is? Take a look at this group of people. Yeah, that's Joe Biden standing in the driveway of the White House. You usually don't see the president there. But the big problem that AOC and her friends on the left have, they're all white people. It's true. AOC is furious that there wasn't enough inclusion here. This hysterical, ignorant woman is driving so much of our national agenda, our media agenda, and that is sad. Well, she doesn't have much influence here. I do find her amusing, though. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.
It's our America. We conquered it. We built it. Great values like honesty and fairness. Great courage. A great nation needs a free press. Newsmax is it. 30 million Americans regularly go to Newsmax when they really need to know. They watch Newsmax TV at home, on the free Newsmax app. They go to Newsmax.com. Start today. Newsmax is real news for real people.
All I can say is that the fake news just doesn't get it, do they?
Oh, you know who the worst is? The absolute worst. Morning Joe, this morning, offering his thoughts on faith and Christianity.
It is a freak show. And you know, David French, when we were growing up in the church, we would have debate about legalism. We would talk about the Beatitudes. We would be talking about blessed are the merciful, for they shall be shown mercy. We'd talk about the Good Samaritan, helping those who don't come from your religious tribe. Now the legalism is around abortion. The legalism is around gay marriage. The legalism is around critical race theory. Christianity has been reduced to abortion. So if you say you're pro-life, you can blow through every beatitude. You can blow through every message of Jesus Christ. And you are considered a, quote, good Christian based on one issue.
Christianity has not been reduced. It can't be reduced. All right. Joe Scarborough doesn't know what he's talking about, but he is representing something that I'm seeing a lot of. People using Christianity as a political weapon to shut us up. People they don't agree with. And that's wrong. And we've got to be bold, and we've got to be strong, and we've got to push back. By the way, the legalisms he was talking about, they're also known as commandments, and they're not meant to prevent us from having a good time. They're meant to protect us, I believe. All right, General Milley, Mark Milley, he's been in the news this week. Here he is with President Trump marching across the street. He was deeply embarrassed by this. He had to apologize for marching with the commander-in-chief. Well, he made a bit of a fool out of himself this week on Capitol Hill as he ventured his opinions about critical race and being woke or not woke. I know why he's doing this. First, what is he doing again? Take a look.
I want to understand white rage, and I'm white, and I want to understand it. So what is it that caused thousands of people to assault this building and try to overturn the Constitution of the United States of America?
All right, this is virtue signaling of the highest order. There's a little bit more, and then I'll tell you why he's doing it.
And I personally find it offensive that we are accusing the United States military, our general officers, our commissioned, non-commissioned officers, of being, quote, woke or something else because we're studying some theories that are out there. That was started at Harvard Law School years ago, and it proposed that there were laws in the United States, antebellum laws prior to the Civil War, that led to a power differential with African Americans that were three-quarters of a human being when this country was formed. And then we had a Civil War and Emancipation Proclamation to change it. And we brought it up to the Civil Rights Act in 1964. It took another 100 years to change that. So look it, I do want to know.
He's been studying critical race theory a lot. Look at that performance and the indignation. Let me tell you what's going on here. General Milley is auditioning to be reappointed to his job. Generally speaking, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and we're going back now all the way, 20 years almost, they serve for 4 years, but it's not a 4-year term. It's actually 2 2-year terms. It's up to the president to reappoint them. It doesn't always happen. They're not always reappointed. General Pace, back in 2007, take a look at this. He only made it 2 years. President Bush was upset about progress in Iraq, and General Pace was out after just 2 years. General Milley hasn't yet been there for 2 years. And he was elevated to that position by President Trump. That's actually not working to his advantage. So what is he doing? He's auditioning for the job and being as left and as woke as he can possibly be to appeal to whoever's in charge of the Biden administration. I'm pretty sure it's not Joe Biden. I want to give a lot of credit to Matt Gaetz. He was tough on the general, tough on the Secretary of Defense, and shaking his head. And I heard some people say, how dare he shake a head at a general? Matt Gaetz never served in the military. He never served in the military, but that is okay. Civilians are in charge of the military, ultimately. He represents a portion of the American people. He's skeptical. I'm skeptical. You don't have to serve in the military. Do not let them shame you into silence. Anybody in uniform, civilians, are in control, at least they should be in this country. With that in mind, I'd like to show you one of my favorite moments from the past couple of weeks. This is Tatiana Ibrahim, a supermom from Carmel, New York. She was blasting the school board up there for being woke and politically correct and introducing critical race theory to her students, to the students there. Well, listen to what she said. And this reminded me of who's actually in charge of America. It's not the people in uniform. It's not the people in the in power. It's just people.
You work for me. I don't work for you. You have a duty. We are entrusting our children to you.
I love it. And General Milley, we are entrusting America's best men and women to you. Cut the nonsense with the critical race theory. You know you're wrong here. You know it. All right. On to Joe Biden. Sleepy Joe or Bulgy Joe? So on the right, that's how he normally looks when he's giving a speech or a talk. He's all squinty. Yesterday, I don't know what was going on. His eyes were popping out of his head. And he talked in the most bizarre manner, kind of like it was some sort of obscene phone call.
I got them $1.9 trillion relief so far. They're going to be getting checks in the mail that are consequential this week for child care. I wrote the bill on the environment. Pay them more. This is an employees bargaining chip now. What's happening?
Is he losing his mind? I mean, this is really, really strange stuff, even for Joe Biden. Anyway, last night, the network news, nobody mentioned it. Nobody mentioned it. They treated it as though Joe Biden was just speaking normally. Yeah, that's Joe Biden. We noticed it. Any normal person noticed it. Even the fake news noticed it. But they don't talk about it. Very, very strange. Folks, a reminder for all of us that being a police officer is an honorable job, and it's still a very dangerous job. We have done so much to diminish them, to stigmatize them. We, the culture in America, this is ridiculous what's happened. Because every day, they are putting their lives on the line. And every day, gosh, a cop was shot in Stockton, California not too long ago. It's all caught on body cam. Take a look.
Police.
Volume 33.
Hey, police.
Hello.
They just knocked on the door, police, and that's what's happened. Jimmy Inn, 30 years old, of the Stockton, California Police Department, killed right there, right then and there. His partner was a short distance away. He responded.
Yeah, I need units code 3. He's strangling the kid and my partner is down. Let the kid go. Let him go. Let him go. Let go of the kid. Hey, firm, we're on the corner. Hey, watch.
I compare this to the challenges my job or your job. It's incredible. It's also incredible that as a country, we so stigmatized and mistreated law enforcement. Not here. All right, also this. Black lives do matter. They do matter. Not the way the Black Lives Matter movement says. They only care when a black life is taken by a white cop. No, all lives matter. Black lives matter, including the life of 17-year-old Mackenzie Ridley, shot and killed Thursday night in Columbus, Ohio. She was caught in the crossfire of a shootout right outside a local community recreation center at about 9 at night. More than 100 young people were gathered at the rec center when rival gunmen opened fire on each other. Mackenzie was struck by one bullet, and it hit her heart. She had graduated high school 3 weeks ago and was headed off to college in the fall. She had her own boutique selling clothes and cosmetics, also volunteered at a local soup kitchen. Family members say she was everything to her friends and loved ones. Police say all witnesses fled the area right after the shooting, so they have very few leads. 17-year-old Mackenzie Ridley shot and killed Thursday night. All right, Kamala Harris is back from the border. She didn't really go to the critical part. She missed it by almost 1,000 miles. We'll have a person with very interesting insight about what Kamala did and didn't do today when we come back.
Have you checked out the Newsmax Daily Podcast with me, Rob Carson? You get daily news, insightful commentary, and believe it or not, comedy. Check it out wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts or at newsmaxtv.com/podcast.
So, Kamala Harris, vice president, arriving in El Paso, Texas, pretending that she's at the critical part of the border. Everybody knows it's not. There she is, of course, having a great time, laughing, giggling. The critical spot where she should have gone is about 800 miles away. Let's go ahead and put it up. El Paso to McAllen, Texas is nearly 800 miles away. And that's where she should have gone. Interesting, though, some people in El Paso had a great message for her today.
Good morning, America. This is Irene Armendariz Jackson in El Paso, Texas, and I'm here to say, Kamala, you came a little too late. We have had this crisis for years. We need solutions. We don't need you parading on the Border Patrol station or acting like you care. Americans matter. America matters. God bless you, America.
I saw that this morning, and I just loved it. Great video, great person, and we found her. She is Irene Armendariz Jackson. She's a Republican candidate for Congress right there in El Paso. Oh, forgive me, former congressional candidate. I hope you run again someday. Welcome. How are you?
I'm great, and I am running in 2022.
Fantastic. That's what I thought originally. Hey, quite a message for Kamala Harris. Reiterate it. What is she missing besides the obvious that you and your neighbors know so well?
Well, I want to make sure that you understand where we're standing. Right behind me is the Obama border wall, the one where all the left voted for. And a few miles away from me, maybe about 20 miles from me, is where the Trump border wall ends. So we do have a crisis. I'm also the wife of a Border Patrol agent. So I don't need anybody telling me the truth about what's going on the border. I have a front row seat. And this has been going on for years. But politicians keep kicking this problem down the street. And we need solutions in El Paso. And I think one of the things that I want Kamala and Biden to understand, and our representative Escobar, who I'm running against, and the person like Beto O'Rourke, is that we need solutions for El Paso. We don't need the government to come against the American citizens. We are endangering American lives, and enough. We need solutions and to be able to protect our children and our the women and our Border Patrol agents who are putting their life on the line every day.
So that's pretty wild. That backyard there, that fence, on the other side
right
of that
here.
Fence is Mexico.
Yes, yes. A few steps away above it, there's a road, and that's still El Paso. But the people that live in this neighborhood, you see the chain link fence that ends right here. The illegal aliens will actually cutting that fence over and over again and slithering through that chain link fence, endangering the lives of the people that live here. The lady that owns this house, she grew up here. It's been in her family since 1912.
Yep.
And she says that she calls this fence her freedom fence because now she can actually go to her backyard.
This is Kamala Harris blaming President Trump for just about everything, including the border crisis.
Exactly.
It is here in El Paso that the previous administration's child separation policy was unveiled. And so we've seen the disastrous effects of that right here in this region. It is here in El Paso that the return to Mexico policy from the previous administration was implemented. We have seen the disaster that resulted from that.
And there's that Homeland Security guy behind her just kind of smiling benignly like, yes, yes, yes. Totally checked out. You know that a lot of folks believe that they don't want to fix this problem on purpose. They want the cheap labor, and the globalists do, and they want the Democrats want the votes. They think they can harness these folks, get their votes, or at least portray them voting in a certain direction. And that may be one of the reasons why they don't want voter ID.
Right, right. Let me just tell you that my dad was a construction worker. And my dad was a construction worker, and he had to leave El Paso many times because illegals would come and underbid the jobs, and he couldn't sustain his family. He was a legal immigrant from Mexico, and he would constantly leave El Paso. And I didn't hear one Democrat speaking about the separation of my family. It was months at a time that my dad had to leave. The American worker matters, and illegal immigration devalues that labor.
Well, we appreciate it so much, Irene. Good luck in the campaign. Stay in touch. You're running for Congress down there in the 16th District. Beto O'Rourke, huh? That's
yes,
where
sir.
He was first. Thank you very much. And as we transition to our next guest, I'd like to show Kamala blaming or citing root causes. Root causes is her favorite phrase about the reason for this crisis.
The effects of what I've already been addressing, which are the root causes of migration, to address the root causes which cause people to leave and often flee, was about addressing the root causes, reinforce the nature of those root causes. Addressing the cause, the root causes, concern ourselves with the root cause issues, taking a leadership role on root causes, the actual root causes that we have placed on the root causes, the overall issue, which is root causes, to invest in the root causes, engage in an active way on the root causes.
All right, a little harsh there. 12 times. Let's bring in Ronald Vitello, former acting director of ICE. Root causes, sure, you could talk about them for 50 years, though. There's always going to be poverty in Central America, at least for the foreseeable future. They're obviously ignoring, in my opinion, the crisis at hand. Sir, your thoughts.
I agree with you. What are we going to do? Are we going to move the U.S. military to Guatemala to straighten out the corruption, the gang violence, and the lack of governance in that country? How long is that going to take? And what did we not hear today at the border or near the border where the vice president was? We didn't talk about resources. We didn't talk about securing the border. We didn't talk about a better way forward or what worked previously in both the Obama-Biden administration, then again in Trump. So we didn't hear any solutions. We heard a lot of pontificating about how they're doing better. Well, yeah, they're doing better. They built more shelter space for the thousands and tens of thousands of kids that have come to the border alone, so they could be placed in the United States. We encourage this behavior. This crisis started when they removed the tools that were in place when they took over. That's why we had a crisis for most of the year so far. And going to the border in El Paso, where she was, she's a stone's throw away from a 30-foot steel border wall. And there's not thousands of children and families coming across the border near where she was, like is happening, as you mentioned earlier in the program, in the Rio Grande Valley. So she didn't see the real problem as it exists. She talked about root causes. That's great. How long is that going to take?
All right. I want to show the real problem as it exists right now. Video of people crossing the Rio Grande. I believe this is near McAllen, Texas. Let's go ahead and see it. It's awful, and there's so much of it. It happens with impunity. You see a long line of people waiting for a boat. It's like a ferry, a shuttle service, back and forth, back and forth. What is not happening now that was happening during the Trump years in that particular area? Why is this happening? With it? What did they actually withdraw to allow this to happen?
Well, the most important thing that was happening at the line to a family that comes in that looks like that, they would be allowed to claim asylum in the United States. But instead of being released as they are now into the United States, they would have to wait in Mexico to have their due process and their hearing. That was keeping many people from sending their children or coming to the border to cross illegally from Mexico. They had to wait for their hearings over there. That worked. Also, asylum accords with the Northern Triangle, so that if you left Guatemala and crossed into Mexico, you could claim asylum there instead of coming all the way to the United States to do it. That all got ripped away on the 21st of January. That's why CBP was overcrowded for many, many months this year. And now It's like them saying, okay, I'm the arsonist, but I put the fire out. The fire's not here anymore. But you still burn the building down.
Well, help is coming, or at least some moral support. President Trump, former President Trump, will be there next week. And we all know that's why Kamala Harris showed up today at the last possible moment, essentially. Ronald Vitello, we appreciate it very much. Former acting director of ICE, to be continued, sir, and we'll be right back.
Thanks a lot.
Or the land.
As sentenced for count one, the court commits you to the custody of the Commissioner of Corrections for a period of 270 months. That's 270. That is a 10-year addition to the presumptive sentence of 150 months.
Well, is the matter closed? It's under appeal by Derek Chauvin, George Floyd there. This happened in May of last year. I really don't have anything else to say about this. I accept the jury's verdict and... As far as an appeal, we'll see what happens. I do have something, though, to say about this. Why aren't more people talking about this case? Ashley Babbitt, we all saw her get killed on television. It happened before all of our eyes, yet it's been buried. Buried by the media, buried by Democrats, buried by many Republicans. It's not going to be buried here. I am privileged once again to have with us Terry Roberts, the attorney for Ashley Babbitt's family. We understand a lawsuit is being prepared against the Capitol Hill police. Terry, welcome back. And Jonathan Gilliam, former police officer, former FBI agent. Welcome to you both. Mr. Roberts, first, I am baffled that there is not more public attention about this matter. She was shot. No warning. She was unarmed, and nobody seems to care. And this question is to Terry, if you don't mind. Terry?
Yes, it's a very strange situation, the lack of attention to the case. But we are getting a lot of support. There is attention from various media, and we're proceeding ahead. It's my job to try to vindicate Ashley's constitutional rights, and with or without the attention, I'm going to do it.
Can I ask you, it's been some time, roughly speaking, when might we expect a lawsuit to be filed, and who specifically are you suing?
Okay, well, we will be suing the United States government and be suing the officer. It takes a while before you can file a lawsuit like this. There's certain period of time that must go by, 6 months, before you can actually bring a suit against the United States government. So we're waiting that time period out. But in the meantime, we're collecting lots of information and records through FOIA actions and contact with the public, getting all kinds of videos. So it just takes a while to build the case.
I actually want to play the moment when she's shot, and then Jonathan, your thoughts. But this was captured, strangely enough, by a Black Lives Matter activist rolling the camera. A Black Lives Matter activist and agitator was on Capitol Hill, a guy who has spoken about overthrowing the government before out loud. But let's roll that, please. Jonathan, your former law enforcement, how is that in any way justified, what we just saw?
I don't think it was. I mean, the only way that they're justifying that is because that area that they were getting ready to enter is a highly protected area because it leads straight onto the Senate floor. And apparently, from what I've been told, I don't know if this is the actual fact or not, but there were people down there, including potentially Mike Pence was down there. Now, with all that being said, there were law enforcement officers directly behind Ashley Babbitt. So obviously it shows a breakdown in communication and tactics by the Capitol Police. It was absolutely a horrific incident, and the weapon handling alone by this individual is absurd. So I think what all the totality of circumstances, and any attorney will tell you that you look at the totality of circumstances, in that particular moment, I cannot understand how deadly force was justified when you had a woman that was not showing any visible weapons except for her arms to walk, trying to get through a window. That was it. She should have been subdued. But as I always point out with the left, you know, the left only finds things to be controversial when it fits their narrative. And I think that's the case here, is that they're not pressing for this. Mainstream media is not going to press for this because they're on the left and it doesn't meet something that they can use to divide the nation. And basically, that's what they used George Floyd's murder for.
You know, wherever Mike Pence was, you're right, Jonathan, she was not she was not threatening anyone. Trespassing is not... an imminent loss of life is not about to happen. Right. So I don't get it. I still don't get it. It's very frustrating to me. To be continued for sure. Jonathan, thank you very much. Terry Roberts, we can follow this, by the way, at Justice for Ashley. Thank you both. And to be continued. And we'll be right back. Remember those days? They were awesome. Well, they're coming back tomorrow night, actually, in a place called Wellington, Ohio. The president, the former President Trump, will be having a rally. We will carry it right here live on Newsmax, 7 p.m. East Coast time. Wellington is outside of Cleveland, Ohio, and he's there in part to endorse our next guest, Max Miller. He is a Republican candidate for Congress in Ohio, and Max, you got the total endorsement of the president. How are you?
I'm doing well, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
So what's the plan for tomorrow night? Is he going to have you come out and warm up the crowd? Is he going to have you join him on stage? Have you been given a heads up?
Been given a little bit of heads up, yeah. So I'll be speaking before President Trump gets on. And, you know, who knows? Maybe I'll get a call up on stage. But I'm certainly honored that the president is coming here. And he's always been committed to Ohio. And I'm not surprised that he's making his return back for his first rally here in the Buckeye State.
Well, it's fabulous. Let's put up the endorsement, by the way. It is enthusiastic. We pared it down because he went on and on about you, Max. But Max Miller is a wonderful person who did a great job at the White House and will be fantastic, a fantastic congressman. He is a Marine veteran, a son of Ohio, and a true patriot. Max Miller has my complete and total endorsement. And we saw you with the president there in the White House. Tell us a little bit about your role as senior advisor to the president.
So towards the end, I was a senior advisor, but right before that, I was director of advance. And in that role, in that capacity, I handled all the negotiations operationally, not only domestically, but overseas. What a lot of people don't know is I was actually in North Korea for 8 hours negotiating on behalf of the president for that historic meeting between Kim Jong-un and President Trump and how that all came together. I was also in Iraq and Afghanistan negotiating on behalf of the president. And these were the things that I had to do on a day-to-day basis in order to make sure that the president's agenda was pushed forward for the America First, also to keep our country safe.
That's pretty cool. That's heady stuff, that Kim Jong-un meeting, and you're there negotiating. And by the way, before all this, you were a Marine, as the president pointed out, and I think we've got a picture of you serving. You were in the U.S. Tell us a little bit about your service in the Marines, if you don't mind.
Sure. So when I graduated from college from Cleveland State University, I always wanted to be a Marine. So as soon as I got my college degree, I walked into a recruiter, and I wanted to be infantry. So I signed a six-year contract to be an infantry reservist, and it was the best 6 years of my life. The Marine Corps instilled so many great values into me, management, leadership skills. But the most important thing they taught me was loyalty, Greg. And you know this. You're a Marine as well, Semper Fi. They always said, you always take care of to the man or the woman to the left or to your right, and everyone will get home safe. And that's exactly what I pride myself on. And that's exactly what I'm going to do in Congress. I'm not only going to take care of the man or the woman to the left or to the right of me, I'm going to take care of all of the constituents in the 16th district, and I'm never going to betray them like Anthony Gonzalez did to them, not once, but twice with an impeachment vote and then a vote for amnesty.
We know about that. Awful stuff. Well, look, I'm pulling for you, man. Good luck, and say hi to the president for us. That should be an amazing night. Let's put that promo up one more time. Thanks, Max Miller, for joining us. The president of the United States having a rally, a great big rally in Wellington, Ohio, which is right outside of Cleveland. We'll cover it live right here at 7 o'clock. Right now, I want to bring in the historians. We've got Doug Weed, former advisor to George H.W. Bush, and Craig Shirley, great Reagan biographer. Gentlemen, welcome. Where do we get? Mike Pence, turning on President Trump. What's going on here? Gentlemen, stand by. I want to play this.
Truth is, there's almost no idea more un-American than the notion that any one person could choose the American president. The presidency belongs to the American people and the American people alone.
I don't know. I think he's doing some virtue signaling to the swamp. No one has said one person chooses the president, but there are good people who thought that he had more options available to him than he chose to exert. Craig, your thoughts?
When I was a boy, my father once told me, somebody throws a right hook at you, you don't lean into it. What Mike Pence is doing is he's leaning into something that is just going to be a devastating body blow. What he needs to do is change the subject. He really needs a signature issue and get away from this thing. He can't make it a winner. He can't explain it. He can't debate it. He can't. It's just it's a non-starter for him. Why does he keep picking at the scab? I have no idea.
Well, I think he's trying to, hey, swamp, look at me. I was on your side. Now, Doug,
but
my
the
my
swamp is made up of Republicans.
The swamp made up of Republicans, right, rhinos.
Not made up of Republicans.
Okay, but what about this? I guess the grievance that people have with him, to the extent they have it with him, is that he had more options available to him. He could have, the theory goes, sent this back to the state capitals and said, I'm hearing these reports, figure this out before I certify. Doug, is that the approach?
Well, that's how some feel. But I got to tell you, Greg, I've been impressed with this relationship. I'm surprised it stayed as well as it did. I was in the Oval Office one day when Pence came in. He was working so hard to rally the Senate for Trump. The Vice President Pence was very loyal to Trump throughout that presidency, but he's supposed to be. That's his job as vice president. I was surprised how loyal Trump as an out-of-the-box thinker was towards Mike Pence. I thought they pulled it off pretty well and did good together. I'm not surprised that it's fraying a little bit now under this intense pressure from the swamp.
Well, yes, and I think a lot of misreporting about the constitutional process and January 6th have exacerbated the situation. Gentlemen, we went a little bit long with our satellite feeds. We will pick this up next week. Craig, Doug, to be continued, and I'll be right back. All right, tomorrow night, a Trump rally. That's Wellington, Ohio, which is outside of Cleveland. 7 o'clock Eastern, a rally. We haven't seen one of those in a long time, and they're always great. They're always fun to watch. I'll be watching from not here. I'm going on vacation. You'll be in great hands with Eric Bolling next week. I'll see you right after the 4th of July. All the best, and thank you. Stand by for Stinchfield.